Hello and welcome in.
Science. Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Hello and welcome to Science Mixtape with me, Kyle Major. Mathematics and music are inextricably linked, all the way back to Pythagoras, who investigated expressing notes as numerical ratios, right through to the modern day, where divisions of our scale have been shown to have deep connections with the Riemann zeta function, which is itself a wonder of modern mathematics. Guiding us through this morass of music and mathematics is Kyle Evans. Kyle is a maths teacher and winner of FameLab 2016 and science communicator extraordinaire. Kyle will be telling us a little bit about the mathematics behind some of his favourite songs. So we'll be looking into the infinite genius of Bob Dylan, Kate Bush's attempt to recite pi to very many digits, and the extent of Beyoncé's mathematical knowledge. From a Kyle to another Kyle, welcome Kyle.
Good morning, nice to be here.
It's good to have you here, and you've brought your guitar as well, so you'll be giving us a sample of some of your own mathematically themed songs later.
I am indeed, I'll do my best.
Brilliant. And also, Miriam, we're joined with you behind the producing desk today. Hello.
Hello, everyone. I'm so excited for today's show. So a mix of maths and music. How exciting. And I know we've got a mathsy show on today. So I just wanted to say we've got two Kyles in the studio. So let's say we've got Kyle squared.
Yeah, that seems appropriate. Before we get started, Miriam has a brain teaser for us. So Miriam, what have you got today?
Okay, so today's brain teaser is using 8 8s and addition only. Can you make 1,000? So again, using 8 8s and addition only, can you make 1,000? So if you think you know the answer, then please tweet us at Science Mixtape or at Soho Radio with your answer. But also, we're going to be talking about the Oscar-nominated film Hidden Figures later on in the show, which is a film that focuses on the untold story of three real-life African-American mathematicians who helped get the first man on the moon. So if you've seen that film and you'd like to share your thoughts on that film, maybe it changed your opinions about maths or mathematicians. So feel free to share your thoughts with us on Twitter at Science Mixtape or at Soho Radio.
Yeah, get in touch. Let's dive straight in. Kyle, what's your first song?
My first song, I think, is going to be Love Minus Zero, No Limit by my hero, Bob Dylan.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals of violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, yet she's true like ice, like fire. People carry roses and make promises by the hours. My love, she laughs like the flowers. Valentines can't buy her.
So that was Bob Dylan with Love Minus Zero, or No Limit. Why did you choose this one, Kyle?
Well, I love this song for a long time, and then eventually I realised this song was actually, the title was meant to be a mathematical formula. You can go on lots of message boards where extreme Dylan fans discuss this kind of thing. And Dylan was a keen amateur mathematician, and he used to give his songs kind of strange mathematical working titles, like Less Than Money or Alcatraz to the Ninth Power was another one. But this is a mathematical working title that actually stuck around. So on the original pressing, the title actually looked like a quotient, like a fraction, with Love Minus Zero on the top and No Limit on the bottom. So the idea is that it's love with nothing taken away, divided by something sort of infinitesimally small, which makes something infinitely huge. Whether the notation's 100% correct, I'm not sure, but, you know, we'll let him off. It was a valiant attempt.
So that slash that I said is actually a divide sign. So it should be, the title of the song should be Love Minus Zero divided by No Limit.
Yeah, that was the original intention, and that was how it looked. It's pretty hard to find, but if you can get an original pressing, that's how it looks on the label.
So, I mean, that's something you mentioned, infinity. This is, everyone kind of has a concept of what infinity is, but like, what, I mean, what really is it?
Well, it is absolutely terrifying for starters. As a mathematician, I was a math teacher, not a mathematician, but I have to deal with infinity probably every day, and pretend that it isn't absolutely terrifying, because if you're sane, it's probably the only thing scarier than death, isn't it? Infinity. But mathematically you have to get away from the existential misery of actually thinking about infinity too much, and just kind of use it as when a variable is tending to something very, very large, and then just say infinity and try not to think about it too much more than that.
So in practical terms, mathematicians kind of use infinity just like a normal number, because it's useful in solving problems.
Yeah, kind of. But then, of course, it absolutely isn't a number conceptually. There's a nice thought experiment, Hilbert's Hotel, we were going to talk about
Think. Yeah, so this is like... So infinity is kind of a number, but not a number. But so what happens when you add one to infinity?
Yeah, so David Hilbert, the mathematician around about turn of the last century, had this big list of problems, but kind of unconnected to that, he's got this nice sort of thought experiment analogy linking to infinity. So Hilbert's Hotel. So in Hilbert's Hotel, there's an infinite number of rooms, countably infinite number of rooms, and one more person turns up. So how do you make space for that one more person in the hotel? You can't send them to the infinity plus one room, because they'd be walking along the corridor forever. They'd never actually get to it. But what you can do in a finite way is you can make everyone in a room pack their things up and move to room N plus 1. So if you're in room 8, you go to room 9. If you're in room 100, you go to room 101. So everyone can follow that operation, do it quite quickly, and the new guest can go into room 1. So infinity plus one is infinity. You've still got a full hotel.
Right. So the person in room one goes to room two, the person in room two goes to room three, and then that carries on for infinity.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
And then the next step of it is that two times infinity is infinity as well, because if an infinite number of guests turn up, then you can still do it just as well. All you have to do is send everyone to the room 2n. So if you're in room 2, you go to room 4. If you're in room 100, you go to room 200. It's a longer walk for people in the higher numbered rooms, admittedly, but it does make up an infinite number of rooms that the new guests can all go into, and everyone who's currently in the hotel has got a room they can go to as well. So 2 times infinity is infinity as well.
Right. So does that mean that like there's only one infinity, you know, any number times infinity is infinity, and that's it? You can't get any bigger.
No, frustratingly, it doesn't, because there's uncountably infinite sets. And in fact, there are different sizes of infinity as well. If you take the numbers, all the numbers between 0 and 1, then that is uncountably infinite. That's more than the rooms in any of those Hilbert's Hotel situations, because, you know, between 1 and 0 and 1, you can have 1.1, and then you could have 1.01, and you can have 1.001. And these numbers can actually never be counted. It's a definably larger set than the integers. So there are more numbers between 0 and 1 than there are numbers.
Right. So this
integers.
It's like that. There's as many numbers between 0 and 1 as there is between 0 and 0.1, and between 0 and 0.01. So you can't count the numbers between 0 and 1. So that's kind of a bigger number.
It's a bigger infinity, absolutely. Where at least there's a way of counting the rooms in the hotel, even though it might take you quite a long time. But it's you cannot count the numbers between 0 and 1 in the same way.
Wow. So not only is infinity plus one infinity, but there's a bigger infinity than that beyond infinity.
Absolutely.
Okay, brilliant. So I think maybe after that mind-blowing explanation, we should probably go on to your next song.
Yeah, although you might have to remind me what it is, because I've slightly forgotten the order.
The next one is The Beatles.
Oh, yeah, excellent. So All You Need Is Love. You might have heard this obscure track before, possibly.
That was The Beatles and All You Need Is Love. Kyle, you were saying that when this was you were younger, this song used to actually drive you a little bit crazy. Why was that?
Yeah, it really did. I don't think it helped that the first time I heard it, I was sharing headphones on a cassette Walkman with a friend. I don't know if anyone out there, if people of a certain age will remember this. But
yeah, cassettes kids are like an iPod, but older.
Yeah. And it was mixed in mono, so like one headphone gets kind of one of the vocals and bass and some brass, and the other one gets guitar and drums, and it sounds a bit mad anyway. But it was the time signature that was driving me crazy, because there was something wasn't right about it, and all the pop music that I'd heard before, that just kind of fitted into nice patterns, because almost all pop music follow is the time signature is built in powers of two, really, so 2, 4, 8, 16, and the number of beats in a bar, bars in a line follows these nice patterns with powers of two. If we go back to the Dylan tune that we were just listening to, like, my love, she speaks like silence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, etc. But then this Beatles tune, All You Need Is Love, kind of feels like it's going to be, and then it's not. So it's the verses are kind of in 7/8 time, which kind of feels like a beat's been dropped in every line. So it's kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so it's in 7/8, but then the third line of the verse actually is in kind of 4/4 time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1. So it's in, so it's two lines in 7/8, and then it goes into 4/4, and then it's in 7/8 time, and then the chorus feels like it's going to be in regular time as well. 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. You're like, okay, we're into 4/4 time, and then they just throw in a line in 6/8 at the end as well. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it goes back round again. And I didn't understand this at the time. I just thought the world was falling apart, basically.
The Beatles have got something wrong, clearly.
Yeah, it's like my favourite band has gone rogue. It's like this, it's been not recorded properly or something. So, but I love, you know, but if you play it now, I won't do so, because there's only so much of a mad bloke singing numbers that you can listen to on a Saturday morning.
You just wait till the next song.
If you play it just in regular 4/4 time, it sounds even more mental. This is the best bit about it. If you straighten it out and just play it straight, it sounds insane. So it took me a long time to get used to the genius, but there you go. That's the Beatles, isn't it?
Obviously, most songs that we listen to are in this 4/4 beat, but this is something kind of creative about making it slightly different and just changing the numbers. And that creativity is kind of also true in mathematics. You know, rather than sticking with regular numbers and thinking outside the box. I mean, how important do you think that is in maths?
Yeah, it's absolutely crucial. I mean, the most of the great developments in mathematics come from when people are just playing around with numbers. It's not like people sit down and go, right, I'm going to now solve this problem in graph theory by really thinking about graph theory. It's not the case at all. That, you know, you might, like Euler, for example, you might solve a problem in graph theory by going and walking around a load of bridges for a while, or you might find something really interesting about prime numbers by just doodling in a lecture and drawing a big spiral of numbers going round and round and round because you were bored, which is what happened with the Ulam spiral, I think it's called. So creativity is absolutely paramount in mathematics. Yeah,
people were able to kind of divorce themselves from the concepts that exist and just play around a bit. And a lot of mathematics is kind of playing around. I'm still kind of bowled over by this thing of negative numbers, which I find amazing. Like, you can't, there's no such thing as a negative one thing. Like, you don't have negative one apples. It doesn't exist. But everybody kind of understands this concept. It's, you know, it's a concept that we use for instance, like, you owing me something or me owing you something else.
Yeah.
And this is an abstract concept that can't be kind of represented in the real world, but can be represented in mathematics. Is there anything that you and you, Miriam, that these kind of examples of abstract thinking that you quite like? Or
yeah, well, I just thought of one actually while you were talking there. So yeah, negative numbers is a great one. I mean, school children mostly are fine with negative numbers, but some of them will still, young, you know, will still call you out on it. You know, show me minus two sheep, go on sir, go on. But there are things like the one that used to drive me crazy was when I first found out about irrational numbers, things like pi, which we're going to come on to later, and the square root of 2, which can't be expressed as a terminating decimal. So the decimal part, root 2 is like 1.41, and then it goes on and on and on, never recurs, never repeats in the decimal part. But you can see root 2. It's the clearest thing. You go outside, find a paving slab that's as long as it is wide, anything that's square, you could measure with a tape measure across from one corner to the other. So it used to blow my mind. It's like, I can see it with my eyes, there it is, but you're telling me that I couldn't measure it.
Yeah.
You know, so
That's it's kind of strange, but it's there in the mathematics, and it becomes more obvious when you actually look at that root two.
Absolutely, this is why I love maths. Is like every day you should try and have a moment like that. If you're doing maths and you're not having moments where you go, oh no, come on, this can't be right, it's really doing your head in. That's what's so great about it, and you might come to understand it. Or you might not, but it's the pushing and stretching yourself. I think that's why people like it and why some people hate it.
So, do you have a favourite abstract concept, Mary?
So yeah, I'm a physicist, so we use maths all the time to express certain things about the world that we live in. So for me, my favourite bit of maths is imaginary numbers. I remember first learning this at university and completely being like mind blown about this. So an imaginary number is a number that is the square root of a negative number. So we all know that the square root of, say, 9 is 3, or the square root of 16 is 4, and so on. But what's the square root of a negative number? Well, that's an imaginary number. So mathematicians express the square root of like minus 1 as the letter I for imaginary. And in physics, we can use imaginary numbers in, say, quantum physics, where we can model periodic motions of, like, light waves or particles that, like electrons, which behave like waves. And those imaginary numbers are really, really important in quantum physics. But also quantum physics is what allows us to have things like computers and stuff. So without imaginary numbers, we wouldn't have stuff like that.
Yeah,
so it's really,
it's
amazing.
Kind of more basic as well. Like, it's very linked to the circle. And I've always thought of a number line, you know, the positive numbers go off in one direction, the negative numbers go off in the other direction, and we always think of imaginary numbers kind of going off to the side. That, you know, they're an entirely different set of numbers.
Yeah. No, what I love about imaginary numbers, just quite quickly, is that partly came about as a result of a competition. So I kind of like that, because mathematicians were trying to solve cubic equations, which was really difficult to solve cubic equations.
So this is an equation that has like an x squared and an x to the power 3 term.
Yeah, and originally I think it was Tartaglia and Cardano, someone can tweet in and tell me if I've got the mathematicians wrong. I can't quite get the third name of the person in the story in my head, but basically people, they would have competitions to solve cubics, which I just like the idea of to start with, but because one of them had an understanding of using complex numbers, they could do it much easier. And this is the key to like what you're talking about, Miriam, is that it doesn't matter that, like with negative numbers, it doesn't matter that you can't see it or you can't show someone what it is. If it's useful, then we'll have it. And that's the mathematician, that's the mathematical mindset. If it's useful, if it helps us do something, it's a thing and we'll use it.
So the other really useful number is pi, which is what the next song's about.
Yeah.
So this is Kate Bush saying pi to very, very many digits.
Yeah.
Wait, we can't have that. It's actually 0628620899.
Yes.
Sorry,
yeah,
Kate.
I noticed that as well.
She's made a mistake there. I mean, is that an important mistake, Kyle? Is that something that we should be concerned about?
No. If you're concerned about this, then you are even more of a mathematical pedant than me, and far too much of a mathematical pedant, actually. What did we count? The mistake was in the 80-something decimal place, 84th. Yeah. Decimal place. I think if you know pi to something like 30 or 40 decimal places, then you can draw a circle with a diameter the width of the observed universe, and you can get the circumference right to within the width of one atom. Do text in if you disagree with that, but certainly I would argue that knowing pi to 80 or decimal places is definitely not a valid life skill.
It's kind of superfluous.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as much fun as it probably is to sit in a big school hall and recite pi to 50,000 decimal places for 8 hours, I wouldn't call it useful maths.
Science
News.
New form of metallic hydrogen proves controversial.
A new subject somewhere between maths and computer science.
A ban on screens in bedrooms may save kids' sleep.
Gene editing saves life of twins.
New organ discovered inside human body.
Well, I mean, I think that one's pretty amazing to start with. A new organ. How can they have not figured out that we had this organ?
Okay, so before this organ is basically based between your intestines and your abdomen. And it holds the intestine close to the abdomen. And before, they thought, for hundreds of years, they thought that this was fragmented and it wasn't a single continuous piece. But Professor Cofrey from the University of Limerick in Ireland actually said, no, actually, it's one continuous piece and it should be considered an organ. So this organ was named mesentery, and the function at the moment is unclear, so scientists don't actually know, but it's a whole new field of science that's active now, and people are trying to find out what it is and what it does.
Wow, so we've got everyone in the world has got a whole new organ.
Yeah. Guess how many organs in your body, like, give me a figure.
50?
Close.
30.
Bit short there. So we've actually got 79 organs, including this new one.
Oh, right. 79. So they included the new one in the count. That's good. I don't know if everyone's heard this week, but there's proved to be some controversy about this new form of metallic hydrogen that's been formed. So metallic hydrogen was first proposed in 1935 by a guy called Eugene Wigner and Hillard Bell Huntington, and they said that at very low temperatures and extremely high pressures, hydrogen would be compressed so much that it starts to behave like a metal. So the electrons are not bound to the nucleus, and they float around like they would do in a metal. And so recently, two scientists, Rangadias and Isaac F. Silvera, have published in Science claiming that they'd produced this metallic hydrogen, and they did it by crushing a sample between two diamonds. And they said that they got to a high enough pressure, and actually then they started to see the sample be shiny. And that's an example, or that's indicates that it's become metallic hydrogen. But since then, other physicists have written to the journal Nature claiming that they doubt their findings. So it's still a bit unknown as to whether this is actually a thing. And it would be amazing if we could actually produce this metallic hydrogen, because people think it exists in the middle of big planets like Jupiter, and it could potentially have superconducting properties if it was stable up to room temperature, which means it could be very useful for all kinds of new technologies and space travel and all those kind of various different things like that.
Wow, that sounds so cool. Where is their lab based, and like, is it really big or
no? It's only the two of them. It's quite a small team.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
But it's proving quite controversial to the scientific community.
And they've got a lot of diamonds there, so they probably don't want to give their address away.
Exactly. Yeah. So Kyle, you're saying that there's a new subject possibly proposed?
Well, I was reading a piece the other day by Conrad Wolfram, who was the founder of the sort of online knowledge engine called Wolfram Alpha, which is sort of an amazing Google for maths. Well, for all sorts of science, really, actually. But my students use it all the time. And it really interests me in that kind of mathematics, as it often is in school, is frankly an outdated subject. It's great fun to teach, and I do think, you know, there's benefit in putting all technology away and really just thinking logically, reducing everything down to pure logic. But this whole no calculator, you know, pencil and ruler mindset is really thousands of years old now. That's not, and it's still sort of kicking on in class. And he argued in this piece that computational thinking is very important, and it's not i.e. computing, but there's something around coding and computational problem solving that could replace sort of mathematics as that key sort of logical subject in schools. And he argues that the nation that first adopts this will have a real kind of head start in terms of development. It's fascinating for me as a maths teacher.
Yeah, it's this idea that computers can do a lot of the stuff that people would normally do with pen and paper now. So it's kind of, it's passing into history.
Yeah, and the last thing you want to be doing is making kids feel like you're wasting their time or making them perform a pointless task to take up time. I don't think anyone would ever say that's what they were wanting to do in the classroom. So it's interesting and scary and exciting all at the same time.
I think it's brilliant. You'd have to change jobs eventually.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking, right, can I eke out a career before retirement and just teaching algebra, before the machines take over.
So Miriam, what else did you see this week?
So this article was about sort of technology and how we use technology before we go to bed. So most people would look at their phones or their tablets or laptops before they go to bed. And that's actually bad for you. So the blue light from your phones, tablets and laptops actually interferes with your sleep patterns because it interferes with a sleep-inducing hormone called melatonin. So the blue light kind of signals to your brain that you need to wake up. So this is really bad. So a researcher in biostatistics from King's College London actually found that kids between ages 6 and 19 who used screen-based media around bedtime slept worse and were more tired during the day. But what they found was really interesting was that just having your phone in your room, not even using it before you went to bed, actually made your sleep worse. So by having your phone in your room, you're thinking about maybe messages that you sent before or stuff like that. So it actually interferes with your sleep patterns, which is really bad.
Yeah, so turn off your tablets and just listen to the radio before you go to sleep. So our next song is going to be Queen Bee, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Been looking forward to this.
I got it with you. I don't know much about algebra, but I know 1 + 1 = 2. And it's me and you.
So Kyle, that was Beyonce with 1 + 1. Apart from the obvious 1 + 1 mathematical title, why did you choose this one?
Yeah, well, I do this, I do an hour-long comedy, maths, music, folk show. I basically have created a show that only one person in the world would want to go to.
Niche.
And they're on the stage at the time, yeah. But part of it is where I look at mathematically incorrect pop songs. For example, there's a song by Common called Making a Name for Ourselves, where the first line goes, I'm your worst nightmare squared. That's double for anyone who ain't mathematically aware, which I think is fantastic. I don't know if it's ironic or not. But because of this, people kind of give me suggestions, and a friend sent me this article in the NME, like scientifically incorrect pop songs. But they were really rubbish suggestions that anyone could come up with. And they kind of slam Beyonce for this song, because she says, I don't know much about algebra, but I know 1 + 1 = 2. And they say, actually, Beyonce, that's just basic arithmetic, but I suppose not many things rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem. Which I sort of take issue with on two fronts, because Beyonce knows that that's not algebra, because it's what she says in the song. I don't know much about algebra, but I know 1 + 1 = 2. So she's perfectly willing to accept that. But also, I disagree with the NME because there are lots of things that rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem, which I'm going to attempt to show you now. Is that okay?
No, yeah, please
right,
do.
Let's do that. The NME says that not many things rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem. Well, I've constructed a list and just thought you might like to hear them. You're all intelligent people, so you have no need to fear them. The NME says that not many things rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem. When I'm done and finished, that's when you can shout and cheer 'em. You're gonna say you love it, and you won't need a truth serum. The currency in Morocco and the United Emirates is the dirham. And the NME says that not many things rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem. And
Just cause I've got a tiny guitar, that don't make me Ed Sheeran. I've met a lot of musicians, but I've still never got near him. He released an album called Multiply and still sold like 10 million. That was a bit of a stretch. But the enemy's wrong, cause plenty of things rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem. Oh, the enemy's wrong, cause plenty of things rhyme with Pythagoras' theorem.
Woo! Thank you.
Oh, that's great. That was so good. Brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, so, I mean, how did you get into this? You with this kind of song and stuff like this, you ended up winning a FameLab last year.
Yes,
How did you get into this?
I did. I'd never really done anything sort of in science communication world. Because it's strange, because I've only recently started dipping my toe into the world of science communication, because it's kind of what I do every day. And I think teachers often think that, you know, they teach all day and then they've had enough of it. But it can be frustrating when you teach, because really you just see your 30 or so bodies in the same room, and there's all these other people out there that you'd like to try and inspire and get interested, and you really only have power over those, you know, 30 or so kids that are in your room at any one time. So yeah, I thought I'd heard of this thing called FameLab, where you have to talk for 3 minutes about a scientific topic of your choice. I was going to just talk about something regular, and then 2 days before, while I was cycling to work, I wrote a song about the Riemann hypothesis in my head, as you do. You know, that's the sort of thing that I do.
Of course, yeah.
And I got through the heat with that, and then just gave it a go, really, and it ended up winning the whole thing. So it's been really nice, and I've met lots of lovely people since doing it.
That's brilliant. And I mean, let's have your next song.
Yeah, so my next song, I believe, is Tightrope by Janelle Monáe.
Monáe and Left Foot.
Tightrope. Kyle, why did you choose that one?
So well, I love the song for starters, and also because Janelle Monáe's doing a lot of acting now, and she's in Moonlight, which is due to come out, which is meant to be amazing, and she's also in Hidden Figures, which is this film that's coming out about the black female mathematicians who are so integral in getting the first American, John Glenn, wasn't it, into orbit in the early 60s.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about this.
No, me neither, shamefully.
And so I was really interested to hear about it. And obviously, before we had computers, people still had to solve mathematical problems. But those computers were people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's this oft-quoted thing, isn't it, that the phone you've got in your pocket is more powerful than the computers that first put people into space. So yeah, I mean, imagine if you were in that situation, how much faith you'd have to have in the mathematicians. And it's a story that I didn't know about either, and definitely deserves to be publicised more. You know, it'll be nice on our wall of maths film posters not to have one that's about, you know, a white dude having a nervous breakdown.
That would be nice. Yeah, so this is the story centred around Katherine Johnson, who was hired by NASA before it was actually NASA, when it was the NACA, and she was calculating trajectories in a pool, and then got taken out as an engineer, and so was doing like the mathematics for like Alan Shepard, the first American in space, and also John Glenn for his first orbit.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that these people were, you know, actually doing these sums. And apparently John Glenn called on her by name and said that he wouldn't go into space until she'd checked.
She'd okayed it. Yeah. Apparently so. It's great. I I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I think I might have to get a little staff trip together. But no, I did see the trailer the other day and looks really good. And definitely the sort of story that we should publicise.
Brilliant. It's good to have maths in the movies as well as in the music. So we had our brain teaser earlier. Would you like to give us a what was it again, so we can try and get it?
So the brain teaser was using 8 8s and addition only, can you make 1,000? So I heard, Carl, you had an answer to that, right?
Yes, I think so. I think it must be 888 plus 88 plus 3 8s.
Perfect, you got that completely bang on. But we also had people tweeting in as well. So shout out to Rebecca Gelding for getting it right as well. So well done to you both.
Brilliant, Rebecca.
That was a tricky one. I couldn't get there. Not quick enough. This kind of maths, not really my strong point. So, Kyle, thank you so much for coming in.
Absolute pleasure.
What are you doing recently? What are you doing not recently? Well, what are you doing in the future?
Right now, I'm going to a science museum with my little boy. But you can find all of my dates on my website, kyledevans.com. Don't forget the D, or you'll end up finding out about a dead country singer or a BMX rider. So 9th of February, I'm in glamorous Croydon at the Spread Eagle. 17th of February, I'm doing Smashfest in South London, which is more of a kind of daytime family show. And then 23rd and 24th, for anyone outside London, I'm at Leicester Comedy Festival, which isn't a children's show. Not that they'd be up at that time anyway. But yeah, have a look at my website for all that information.
Brilliant. So so we're going to play out on your last song. Mm. And thank you so much for coming in. It was great to hear you and hear you play. What's the last song you've got for us?
Well, I gave you two and I wasn't sure if we were allowed one of them because it might have had a naughty word in it. So are we going for it anyway? We're going for, if you think this has all been nonsense, what we've been talking about, you might enjoy this. This is Numerology by These New Puritans.
Number 3, which numerology is all shit. Number 4 is the number that will.